Dual by Anderson replacement windows and entry door systems installed by trained craftsmen. Product details at MrRogersWindows.com.
Talks, I'm Mike Collins. It was revealed yesterday that AMC's The Walking Dead, the most popular show on basic cable, was renewed for a fifth season. The Walking Dead is about zombies and plays into America's increasing fascination with the undead. Given our other preoccupation with vampires and werewolves, we thought we'd use this Halloween day as an opportunity to explore the phenomenon. To do so, we've invited Shannon Bowerly to join us. She is an instructor in the Women and Genders Studies and American Studies departments at UNC Charlotte, where she specializes in comparative myth and religions and outcasts and outsiders in society. Who could be more outcast than zombies? And Shannon knows all about that, given that she teaches a popular course at the university called The Zombification of America. Really?
Yes, yes. And thank you for having me.
Was this your idea?
It was. A couple years ago, I spoke to our chair and said, you know, what about doing something zombie in American studies since it's so popular? And just came up with the title Zombification of America and developed it from there.
Okay. Well, we'll talk more about that as we go through the program. Thank you for being here. Adam Frazier is a freelance writer and film critic and the administrator for the pop culture website Geeks of Doom. I'm assuming that's geeksofdoom.com.
That's correct.
Okay. He's also the author of Creative Loafing's video game column, Console Me, a little play on words. Thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having me.
And Katie Bearden is a professional actor and makeup artist, and she got an early start. We were going to have you make up our producer, Alexia, as the show went on. I don't know what time you got here, but Alexia either had a very bad night last night or has been made up. Is that correct? Get a little closer to that microphone.
Yes.
Do not be shy.
Yes. Yeah. Alexia had a really late night last night, and she's also infected, too, by the way. But aren't we all?
We're going to post some pictures of your work on our producer, Alexia Girodi. Your skills, I'm told, are in high demand for independent horror films, of which there are many, and you hold the title of Best Character Costume from the Charlotte Comic-Con convention for your creation of Zombie Wonder Woman.
That is correct.
Did you put that on yourself, or did you put it on somebody else?
I applied it myself, yes.
Applied it to yourself. What does Zombie Wonder Woman look like?
Basically the iconic character who has been infected and has on her zombie makeup.
Let's start there. Why would we want to see a Zombie Wonder Woman? Everything has to be a zombie, right? Why? Why is that? What's going on here?
We're fascinated with zombies, and it makes it even better when it can be an iconic character like Wonder Woman. I've seen Iron Man, zombified. It's nice to see a twist on it.
You know, we've gone through this period where, because of the shows like True Blood on HBO and the Twilight series of movies, just last week, NBC started Dracula on Friday nights at 10 o'clock. Why? This used to be relegated to black and white, late night, very low grade television shows on local TV only, or at B grade movie theaters where you could get in for a buck. Why do we gravitate toward vampires and werewolves and zombies all of a sudden?
You know, those old monsters, the universal monsters, they just won't die. They've been adapted hundreds of times, and they continue to be adapted, and I don't think we'll ever really see the end of them, you know. Not a few years ago, you had the Bram Stoker Dracula remake with Gary Oldman, and it just continues from there.
But I remember as a kid, one of the other fascinating or things we were fascinated with, I suppose, from the horror genre were mummies. The mummy movies were everywhere.
Yeah.
We don't see them anymore. Are mummies a subset of zombies?
No. Some people.
Well, why not? Well, they walk the same way.
Mummies are mummified. I mean, they're dead creatures. A zombie has been infected by something. A mummy is created because of a rite of burial, so to speak. A zombie's either been infected by some radiation or some poison or just something out there that we can't quite figure out what's causing it.
You're talking about this as though it were real. This worries me.
Why?
Because maybe they are.
There in some, yes, actually, in some countries and cultures, there is an idea of the zombie, but it's not the zombie like we think of in the films.
We know where the Bram Stoker's Dracula started the vampire. I guess it amplified the vampire legend and put it into print maybe for the first time. So we kind of know where the idea for Dracula the vampire came from. We know Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and the monster is not Frankenstein. That's the man who creates the monster is Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. But we know where that legend comes from. Where does the idea of the zombie come from?
Originally, it comes from our basic idea of it is in Haiti. And some people associate the religion of voodoo with zombies. And it's true, there is some slight association, but not everyone who practices voodoo believes in the zombie necessarily. Mm-hmm. But the Haitian idea of a zombie is actually a person that has been put to death, and it seems like they're dead, and then they're resurrected by something called a bokor, someone called a bokor. And they're enslaved. They're not something to be feared. They're something to actually feel bad about and to take care of.
Now, do those really exist? Because I was doing a lot of reading about zombies yesterday, something I always do.
Of course.
on Wednesday afternoons. Yes. And evidently there's a drug that can be used and has been used in Haiti to make people kind of zone out in a zombie-like state. Did they administer that drug to certain people so that they could enslave them and they would be docile?
Yes. Well, it's not just one drug. It's
a cocktail.
A cocktail. Everything from a puffer fish to a cucumber zombie. It's a certain kind of plants. It's a potion made.
So, of course, movies spread these things to pop culture. Mm-hmm. And I'm told that in early zombie films, many of them took place in Haiti.
Yes. Most of the first zombie movies like White Zombie with Bela Lugosi and I Walked with a Zombie were the typical voodoo-style zombie, and most of those films took place in the Caribbean. It really wasn't until George Romero's Night of the Living Dead that we introduced this concept of flesh-eating cannibals.
You'll be happy to know that George Romero sat in that chair not more than 2 years ago, I think.
Oh, wow.
When we talked to him about his zombie movie. So you can take that chair with you when you go. I know it'll mean something to you.
Split it up.
So it was through movies that zombie culture escaped Haiti. Is that essentially accurate?
Well, actually, it was the book William Seabrook's The Magic Island. He went into Haiti in the 1920s and wrote this book. I went to Haiti in Africa and talked about these zombified people. Mm-hmm. And he's brought the idea back about the zombie and kind of sensationalized it. And actually, the film White Zombie got a lot of its ideas from the book, Seabrook's book.
So is that how we went from the docile, enslaved, not-to-be-feared zombie of Haiti to the undead, decaying flesh, chasing after human flesh zombie that we have today and that that Katie Bearden has created out of our producer here today.
Yeah, well, yeah, after the 30s or 40s, I mean, you also had the Revenge of the Zombies in the 40s where you had this mad scientist in Louisiana who was creating zombies to help the Nazis. So it reflects things that are going on culturally.
What were they seeking revenge from, being dead? Because when they're not dead, they're undead.
When Nazis are involved.
Of course.
That's all you need.
That, exactly right. But the fascination that we have with all of these things that go bump in the night, these creatures that only come out at night, vampires and werewolves and zombies, what's going on in our psyche? Why do we gravitate toward that? Why do we like to go to films like that and stay up late and watch TV shows like that and go out on trick-or-treat night? Even adults do this now.
Oh, yes.
Big time as zombies and vampires and things like that. Why do we do that?
Because it makes it easier on us to see it all played on screen. It's fictionalized. It helps us handle different issues that are going on in society. And if we can see it happening on the screen and not in our everyday life, we can go to bed at night and not worry so much about it.
Is this just a zombie thing, or is this a 21st century, 20th century thing, or has this been going on in popular culture since the very beginnings?
Well, I think, you know, we have a history of using fictional narratives, specifically post-apocalyptic stories, to cope with impending doom. You know, every culture has their own creation myth and destruction myth, and I think the zombie apocalypse is kind of a way for us to have an enemy in that. It's not just the, you know, asteroid scenario. We like to think that if zombies appeared, that we could survive it, that we would have a scenario in place.
How much of this has to do with Christianity? Because there is this story in Christianity that on the day of, on Judgment Day, the dead will rise and be judged. And I guess in our minds, they will rise from the graves as physical, as their physical bodies. And yet, I suppose, depending upon how long you've been dead, you'll be in various different stages of undevelopment, so to speak. So is that where does this zombie fear come from, the fear that we have of Judgment Day?
I would say not necessarily for everyone. Certainly some can see it that way. For others, it's just the basic idea of death. What happens when we die? We try to handle and figure out, you know, when we die, do we just get stuck in the ground? Do we resurrect? Are we reincarnated? Mm-hmm. So it's a way of kind of manipulating this idea and helping us.
So the fact that we have these stories, these myths, and also these movies and films, and I suppose they're video games.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
And which we'll talk about. What does that say about us, that we need these things, that we want these things in our lives, that we use these things to, I guess, exercise our own fears and demons inside our own head, that it's a release in a way for us? What does that say about us?
Well, it's the psychological aspect. We try to figure out everything. It's not just death or understanding these monsters or what's going on in society. It's trying to interpret it and make sense of our world, which I think is a very human emotion. And when you have zombies, they don't necessarily care about making sense of the world for most zombies. You know, they just go and do what they're going to do. It's not, you know, there's no rationale that's needed for it, so to speak.
Is there a template? Katie Bearden, you're the makeup artist here. I know you've done zombies all over the place, and you just turned one of our producers into a zombie. So is there a template for this, or is what you do in the creation of a zombie pretty much up to your creative bent?
Well, my mentor, Gregory Hewitt, always told me that every zombie should have their own story. So when you go to create a zombie, which has changed a lot since Romero's Night of the Living Dead, where they are just kind of hollowed out in blue, the makeup has progressed, especially since The Walking Dead show has come out. Usually there's either a prosthetic cut involved or, as I applied to Alexia, a gunshot wound for somebody that thought they were going to take Alexia down, but
didn't do it.
Rule number one,
have a picture or two of Alexia and her zombie transformation up at WFAE.org/CharlotteTalks. This gunshot thing, you can't kill a zombie, right, with a gun, can you?
Oh, only to the head. Mm-hmm. You must kill the brain.
And so they missed her because she's got it right below her neck.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to do somebody else in this room, would you do them completely differently, or would they have
Absolutely.
Some of the same characteristics as a zombie?
Well, every zombie has to have a point of infection. So maybe it's a bite, maybe it's a scratch, maybe they are completely infected on their own when they pass away. So Alexia has been infected for a while, so she's got...
And what are they infected with?
I don't know. That's the beautiful
That's the mystery.
Thing.
The mystery.
Well, you know, I think really this whole zombie craze as it is now really started in the year 2002, and we'll talk about that.
All right, 2002. That's when we all became infected as a culture with zombie culture. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Boom. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the 20th Annual Carolina Renaissance Festival, an artisan marketplace with feasting, jousting, and entertainment for all ages, Saturdays and Sundays, 10 to 5:30, now through November 24th, renfestinfo.com. And Boatsman Gilmore Wagner, certified public accountants helping companies achieve their financial goals with offices in the Charlotte and Huntersville Lake Norman areas, BoatsmanGilmoreWagner.com. Well, tomorrow's November the 1st. We start the month with lots of creativity. First, we welcome the creator of one of the most popular kid shows on TV, Dan Poppenmeyer's The Genius Behind Phineas and FERB. And while we talk about that, we'll also talk about something serious, a medical condition called hypoplastic left heart syndrome. And then we welcome back the Moving Poets. They went to Germany from Charlotte. Now they're back. We'll find out more tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the film 12 Years a Slave is a brutal reminder of the connection between America's early economic success and the North American slave trade, facing up to the moral and economic cost of slavery.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's close to midnight. Something evil's lurking in the dark. Under the moonlight, you see a step that almost stops your heart. You try to scream, but terror takes the sound before you make it. You start to freeze as someone looks you right between the eyes. You're
Jackson. A little zombie music for you this morning of sorts as we talk about the zombie phenomenon with Shannon Bowerly. She's an instructor at UNC Charlotte on comparative myth and teaches a class called The Zombification of America. Adam Frazier is a writer and film critic. And administrator of geeksofdoom.com and the writer behind Creative Loafing's Console Me column about video games. Katie Bearden is a makeup artist who has made up one of our producers this morning, and you can see pictures of Alexia and her zombie transformation at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. That song was from 1984, and I would have thought that that would be the beginnings of our modern fascination with all things zombie. But you were just saying before the break, Adam, it all began in 2002. What was the kickoff?
Well, pre-2002, I mean, through the 70s and 80s, obviously Romero made tons of zombie movies, and Return of the Living Dead by Dan O'Bannon was huge. But really in 2002 is kind of the resurgence. Danny Boyle's 28 Days Later introduced this concept of fast-moving zombies, which is kind of like what Katie was talking about with the makeup. They're infected with this rage virus, as they call it, and they act like they have rabies. And that kind of spun off into Zack Snyder's remake of Dawn of the Dead, which was a Romero film where the zombies are moving super fast and you can't escape them. And really, from there, it's just been kind of a snowball.
Well, I have to say that in those early zombie films that I saw, I always wondered, these zombies are moving incredibly slowly. And we have the humans backing up against walls, shrieking in terror. And I was thinking, why don't you just walk away? What's up with that?
Well, you know, you can do that sometimes when it's a couple zombies. But like The Walking Dead, you know, they kind of do that. If it's one or two zombies, they'll try not to make an altercation. They'll just walk away. But a horde of those slow moving zombies moving together in one time is just as inescapable.
So in the late 20th century, early 21st century view, human view of zombies, what exactly is a zombie? How would you describe one?
It is a creature that was dead, a human that was dead and becomes a creature resurrected through something. They have no real cognitive thoughts, even though they start to evolve, though. Mm-hmm. Certainly the zombies begin to evolve, and you also have, just talking about the 21st century, you've got ideas about the romantic zombie, like in the case with Warm Bodies, where you have this relationship between a young zombie boy, a young zombie hunter girl, and it's actually loosely based on the Romeo and Juliet of Shakespeare. So you've got, you have another film like Dead Girl we were talking about earlier before we went on air, and it's different ideas. You've got romantic, you've got funny zombies, comedic zombies with Zombieland, Shaun of the Dead, of course.
Yeah, Shaun of the Dead, another film there around 2003, 2004 that brought zombies back into the mainstream, I think.
When people who are really in, and obviously there are people who are into zombies, when people who are into zombies are confronted with humorous things, the things that don't play along with the legend and the typical characteristics of the zombie, like Shaun of the Dead, Are they offended by it, or I mean, do they react negatively toward it, or do they just say, hey, it's another way to get people into this with us?
I don't think so, as long as it's respectful to the roots. I mean, Shaun of the Dead is hilarious and it's very clever, but it does strictly follow rules established by Romero and those guys. So, you know, I think it's the same thing as Batman. There's room in the world for the Adam West Batman, the Tim Burton version of Batman, and the Dark Knight. So,
Katie, you're called to do makeup for a lot of different characters, I'm sure, and just normal people who are appearing in movies. Are zombies difficult to do? Are they easy to do? Are they fun to do?
Absolutely, they're a joy to do, but it used to be hard, and now I've done so many of them that I could probably do it with my eyes closed and it would still be okay.
Do you remember the first one you did?
The very first one I did? It was probably almost, I'd say, 5 years ago, back in college.
So how did you know how to do it? Did you get a book out of the library? Did you talk to other makeup experts? And how do you do it?
I found a zombie of my own.
Did you really? Okay.
No. I went to school for theater. So in the realm of being schooled in the art of theater, I also learned stage makeup. Huh? But as I stated before, my mentor, Gregory Hewitt, who is based out of Kannapolis, taught me a lot. And he is a special effects makeup artist, taught me many, many anatomy lessons, if you will, because the only way it's going to look as if this person was once real is if you reference an anatomy book.
Well, I have a question about this gunshot wound you've given to Alexia here. I've never seen a gunshot wound on a real human body and hope never to see one, but it is pretty gruesome, and it is...
It's actually a...
It's kind of elevated.
It's an exit wound. Somebody shot her in the back.
It's an exit wound.
It is.
I see.
That's why it's all protruded.
And you know about these things because you studied...
Well, also watching a lot of makeup artists, like one Tom Savini, I learn a lot about, like I said, anatomy and how a body decomposes.
So for somebody going out tonight who wants to go out as a zombie, what would you tell them? What are the tools of the trade? What must they have? Is it all makeup? Is it putty? What colors do you use? How do you turn somebody into a zombie?
Well, basically what I used on Alexia, I made the blatant choice of using anything that you could purchase yourself at Morris Costumes.
Okay.
So what she is wearing on her face is a cut, a prosthetic cut, and the bullet wound I found at Spirit Halloween. And I used a bruise and a blister wheel. So every zombie must have a point of infection, as I stated before, which is the scratch on her face. And I put some nice... I told Alexia if we opted for contacts, which I'm not really in favor of because you only have one set of eyes, we usually dirty out the teeth. So she's got nice green and yellow teeth.
So you would put... there are contacts to make you look...
Yes.
That's not a good idea.
Well, I mean, there are different precautions. Right. I personally don't like to wear contacts because I'm not used to them.
Right.
But coloring your teeth is a lot easier to brush off.
Yeah, but it tastes good when you're putting it on,
That's
sure.
That's right. It's delicious.
This idea of the infection, are zombies infected after they're dead, or are they infected just before they die? How does that work?
Well, it depends on the television show or the film. Some films, they are infected after they die, and others, like in the case of Walking Dead, I hate to be a spoiler in case someone's not seen it, but you're already infected when you're alive. It's just however you die, you will come back as a zombie.
Oh, well, there's no stopping them, is there?
No. So far.
Zombies seem mindless while at the same time single-minded. They all want to go after the living. What are they searching for? What do they want from us?
Well, there's quite a few theories. One is that they are hungry for flesh. I know he's like, oh, there's theories about zombies. Zombies' wants and needs. Some think that they want to eat flesh. For some, it's to spread the virus. For others, it depends on the zombie or the film. It's trying to establish a human connection or perhaps become human again. And just they do it in a very, very wrong way.
So so they're trying to eat our flesh and sometimes our brains, right?
Yes. Actually, that Dan O'Bannon's Return of the Living Dead mm-hmm. from 1985, that was kind of the first movie that put this idea out there that zombies wanted brains because mm-hmm. by consuming brain matter, as Shan was saying, they could be closer to being human again.
Uh-huh.
In Warm Bodies, they do that as well because by him consuming the brain, he's able to get the memories.
What kind of games are zombies featured in? What kind of video games?
Zombies have consistently been in video games since, I mean, the late 80s, since the Atari and Commodore 64 system. But I think really most people associate zombies with games like Zombies Ate My Neighbors mm-hmm. from 1993 or the Resident Evil series, which has spun off into its own series of movies. There's Dead Rising, Left 4 Dead. I think the zombie is just a consistent good thing to shoot at in a video game.
Yes.
And even it's worked its way into, you know, more mainstream games like Call of Duty. There's zombie modes where you can kill World War II zombies and things of that nature. So
I'm being given a note here from somebody who's listening. Plants versus Zombies.
Yes, Plants versus Zombies.
Left 4 Dead. Are these two video games?
Yes, Left 4 Dead is a very popular shooter where, you know, you and friends or people online are this squadron of survivors, and you're out there trying to make it from point A to point B, killing zombies.
I mentioned at the top of the show that The Walking Dead, which we've referenced many times so far today, which is on AMC, and it's the most watched basic cable show on television. Mm-hmm. It outdraws Mad Men, which everybody talks about, by three or four times mm-hmm. the audience size, and it was just renewed for its fifth season on AMC. And that's a testimony to the popularity of the zombie culture. But then there's a movie like World War Z, which is a Brad Pitt film that just tanked, and it came after a very successful book mm-hmm. called World War Z. How do you explain that? It's got Brad Pitt, and it's about zombies, and no one went to see it.
Well, and I do really like the book World War Z, but the film doesn't really stay too true to the book,
yes.
and uses Brad Pitt as kind of a focal character and turns it more into an action movie like Will Smith's version of I Am Legend, mm-hmm. you know. I think another problem with that movie is the zombies themselves were all CGI, and they all moved as this one big ant-like horde. You know, it lacked the authenticity, I think, of what people were expecting after watching The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm. According to an article in the Charlotte Observer, our interest in zombies waxes and wanes, and it seems to grow in times when things seem tough and confusing. Mm-hmm. What is hard or confusing? It's a stupid question, given the show that I do here, but what is hard and confusing about what we're going through in the world today? Oh, can we start with the debt crisis and the government shutdown? What's hard and confusing about it?
Well, it's uncertainty. I mean, the world's chaotic, and throughout history, well, movie history, this has happened. So, for example, in 1985, you had the Romero's Day of the Dead, and that was kind of reflecting off of the AIDS crisis. You had zombies, they were capturing zombies and trying to figure out what spread the virus and experimenting with them. And
so the virus that turned these undead into zombies was an allegory or a
absolutely
for the AIDS
virus. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I'm told that Night of the Living Dead, which was the first George Romero film, mm-hmm. was a reaction to civil rights and the unease that people felt about the other coming into the mainstream. And it turns out that the African-American star of that film mm-hmm. is untouched by the zombies. He's killed by the humans.
Yes, in the end, it's reminiscent of a lynch mob.
Yeah.
When they come after him with, you know, the large groups of with dogs, and they just go randomly shoot him in the head without even really getting to know him.
So what is The Walking Dead an allegory for? Do you know?
Trying to survive in a world of chaos. And also I get the idea, too, that humans are the largest danger. We're more in danger by humans than we are in zombies in many of these cases. The majority of people that die in The Walking Dead are killed by other living humans, not the zombies.
Who are panicked.
Yes.
By the zombies.
Or they're also maybe not such good people, so to speak,
uh-huh.
either.
Okay, it's kind of like Under the Dome. Let me see here. David on Facebook, this kind of plays into what we're talking about here. He writes, well, he wrote, because it's gone now off my screen. If you could put it back, that would make me very happy. David on Facebook, do you think it also plays off the people who plan for the end of the world, the preppers who we've had on the show recently?
Absolutely. I mean, shows like Doomsday Preppers, you know, it all points to the post-9/11, you know, people want to be prepared for the end of the world, as it were. And I think zombie stories give people an outlet for those kinds of survivalist situations, how they think they would act when the world's coming down.
One of the best commercials on television right now is a commercial for Sprint, where a zombie walks into a Sprint store and wants to inquire about the unlimited data for life plan and wants to know if that applies to the undead as well. It's very funny. Do you know you've arrived when you're in a commercial?
Yeah, of course, it's friendly. Yes.
I mean, they've certainly saturated the mainstream right now. I think they're the most popular thing going in terms of horror icons. So,
now you've brought your daughter and a friend with you. And I'm going to ask them to step up to that microphone over there for just a couple of seconds, because I want to pick their brain, because these are young people.
Pick their brain. Given what we're talking about.
I'm a zombie. This is Hannah, your daughter Hannah, and her friend Cameron, who are skipping school for this today. You are both interested in zombies. Is that correct? You're going to have to get a little closer to that microphone. How so? What is the fascination with zombies for the two of you?
Hannah? I think since they're so different, they're cool.
Cameron?
I don't know.
Cameron?
Yeah.
This is going well. and are you going out tonight for Halloween as zombies?
Yes.
Is this something that pervades? Do kids in school with you, are they into this as well? I mean, you're Hannah, you work with, you're in a house with a mother who teaches zombies at the university level, so your whole world is probably zombified in some way. But do your friends have the same fascination for this?
Yeah, I mean, we all watch the movies and everything about zombies, so everyone likes them.
Do you watch other kinds of horror films, or is it just basically zombie films?
There's other horror films, like The Possession or Paranormal Activity.
I don't know these films. Imagine that. So now, why? Is it because you want to be scared, because you think they're silly, because it's fun to believe for the 2 hours or the 110 minutes that this is going on?
I think people like to be scared.
Cameron looks petrified right now. How's the feeling this morning? Do you like this feeling, being scared like this?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, ladies. I appreciate it. Stephen Marsh, I think it's how you say his name, M-A-R-C-H-E, wrote a column about zombies in Esquire magazine, and he pointed out that some experts see vampires as representative of the sexuality of a teenage girl, while zombies represent that of a teenage boy. Do you think I don't know what that means. Do you think that's apt?
Yeah, I mean, I think warm bodies kind of played into all of that, a craving for flesh, if you will.
Let's leave it at that. We'll take a break, and we'll come back with more about zombies. And I want to find out about this course you teach at the university about zombies as well. We're here with Shannon Bowerly, Adam Frazier, and Katie Bearden. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. Knight Foundation promotes informed and engaged communities and helps NPR advance journalism excellence in the digital age. More at knightfoundation.org. And the Charlotte Symphony, in concert with the Midtown Men, four of the original Jersey Boys, bring the 60s musical hits alive tomorrow and Saturday in the Belk Theater. Tickets at 704-972-2000. The film 12 Years a Slave is a brutal reminder of the connection between America's early economic success and the North American slave trade, facing up to the moral and economic cost of slavery, the topic of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. Perhaps you'd like to join our conversation about called Zombies. Put your arms out and walk carefully to the computer, wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte Talks is celebrating 15 years on WFAE, and as part of the occasion, I'd like you to join me next Wednesday for an evening with best-selling author of the Bones book series, Kathy Reichs. We'll record a special edition of Charlotte Talks at 7 p.m. at the McGlowan Theater here in Spirit Square. And after the show, stick around for a reception and book signing. And you can tour the Charlotte Talks studio at Spirit Square. Find out more at WFAE.org. And we hope to see you there. Hold your head up. Just thought that was cute that they'd be singing a song called Hold Your Head Up when it's clear that zombies have difficulty doing that. Anyway, that's how it goes. We're here with Shannon Barrelly, an instructor at UNC Charlotte. Comparative myth, outsiders, and outcasts are some of the things that she considers. She also teaches zombification of America. That's a class, which we'll talk about in a second. Adam Frazier is a writer and a film critic, the administrator of geeksofdoom.com. What is geeksofdoom.com? Just out of curiosity.
It's a pop culture website. We cover everything from games, comics, movies, television. So zombies factor very heavily there.
Okay. And Katie Bearden, who is a makeup artist who has made up Alexia Girodi, one of our producers this morning, to look like a zombie. And you can see pictures of that on our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. Gary on the web says, perhaps our current fascination with zombies is an attempt to offset the grotesqueness of our current political personalities. I'm afraid the zombies just won't do. I personally prefer the vampire. At least he is upfront and honest about his blood-sucking activities. What's your reaction to that? Since you deal in both worlds, zombies and vampires.
Sure. I think there's a cultural fixation on kind of fictionalizing our own deaths, and vampires are certainly one way of doing that. But we as a culture really enjoy, I think, the destruction on a massive scale. We've become obsessed with the apocalypse, maybe more than zombies themselves. But zombie stories allow for that in a way that I don't think vampires or werewolves do, because they're the sheer amount of them. You cannot escape in the zombie apocalypse. You just simply have to survive.
Where did the idea come from for the zombie apocalypse?
I think really with starting with Romero. I mean, Romero's films, you know, they start with Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead. You get the idea. But, you know, in Dawn of the Dead, a bunch of survivors are stranded in a mall with zombies. And then when they finally do escape the mall, they realize that everywhere they go, there's just more zombies, and that they may have taken over the whole world. So
we've got the zombie apocalypse, and the apocalypse seems to be a theme that runs through more than just zombie and vampire TV shows and movies. Mm-hmm. The current TV show Revolution, which is shot here in North Carolina, deals with the dissolution of society when the power goes out, and it's kind of an apocalyptic show. Mm-hmm. There's another show called Falling Skies, which deals with aliens taking over the Earth, and that also appears to be about the end times. And we have a contingent of true believers who anticipate the end times at any moment and want them to come. Is that and since you teach religion and myth as well, is there a coming together of all these ideas? Is there something going on that has caused this rise in people waiting for the with it, where you disappear if you're a good guy?
Rapture.
The rapture. Thank you. Waiting for the rapture and the zombie apocalypse. Is there a connection?
Well, I think historically all cultures have a myth of destruction, ultimate destruction, and having to rebuild the world or everything being destroyed. You've got, you know, the Ark, Noah's Ark, and Gilgamesh, all these, the flood coming, the flood stories. That's pretty consistent.
Why?
Because we want to know when it all is going to end. We want to know when it's all going to end, and we want to know how we can maybe, in some cases you were saying, help it end, or in other cases survive it and thrive it, so to speak.
How do we know it's all going to end? Maybe it's never going to end.
I completely agree with that.
All good things come to an end. Even this program. Let's see here. Scott on Facebook, part of the end of the original Night of the Living Dead was filmed in the backyard of my ex-wife's childhood home in Butler, Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow.
Romero showed up at the door, offered her dad $150 to rent the yard for a couple of days, and the next thing she knew, there were all these weird-looking grown-ups staggering around out back. Personally, my favorite is Zombie Land.
Oh, yeah.
What is that?
Zombie Land is a comedy like Shaun of the Dead or Warm Bodies that...
lays down the rules.
Yeah, it lays down the rules of how to survive the zombie apocalypse.
And Carolyn tweets, I think Shaun of the Dead is the most realistic zombie movie in terms of human response. Agree? Disagree?
Yes, because they're all oblivious to what's going on till a quarter of the movie. And it kind of speaks also to humans being oblivious to the conditions.
Gary emails, I think there's another element to the zombie phenomenon currently underway. Vampires are fundamentally a club and aristocratic. Werewolves are also fundamentally aristocratic. I'll get you to explain that in a second. Zombies are entirely egalitarian. One doesn't have to be an aristocrat to be a zombie. Anyone can be one. Zombies meet Americans' needs to feel included in the greater whole. W-H-O-L-E.
I think there's something to that in terms of just being a human and surviving as a group. You know, I think a lot of these post-apocalyptic stories, they actually invoke hope amidst the apocalypse. You have humans coming together that in ordinary circumstances would never get along or work together. And so maybe there is a little bit of that political element to
what
it.
What about the aristocratic? I understand the aristocratic nature of at least the origin of the vampire, because you have Dracula, who is based, I think, on Vlad the Impaler, who was a ruler in Romania or someplace like that. But then you have Barnabas Collins from Dark Shadows, who...
Of course.
He just comes from a rich family. But what about werewolves? What's aristocratic about a werewolf?
Well, I think now the way we're seeing werewolves interpreted in Twilight or True Blood is that they are part of a pack.
Mm-hmm. And so are zombies.
Also true. But there's a pack, there's a pack leader, and I think there's an idea that you have to earn your way into that pack.
Should have played leader of the pack this morning. What is it about zombies and packs? Why do they seem to travel in herds?
Once again, there's some other theories about that. some would say they do it as a cohesive unit. They work together. Others, they just happen to be in the same place at the same time and wander together.
Are they rising from the graveyard all at the same time? Because in some of these movies, you do see a hand come out of the ground.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since we've seen zombies come from the grave. It's,
okay.
It's more often the infection route this time.
Okay.
Around.
So you teach, Shannon, a university level class on zombies, and some, like our governor, might scratch their heads and wonder aloud about how this is relevant to a college education and how you're going to get a job after college if you take a class on zombies. So I will let you defend it.
Well, one, I would say it's not just that class that doesn't necessarily ensure you that you get a job after college. Well, to my students' dismay, I think they thought the same thing. What an easy class. We're going to watch, World War Z and The Walking Dead and look at some really cool images of zombies. But in actuality, there's a lot of cultural context to it. For example, we start off talking about the origins of the zombie with the different religions and different cultures, Africa and Haiti and into Louisiana. Then we examine the cultural context. For example, you were talking about Romero's the 1968 Night of the Living Dead, dealing with civil rights and racism. So then we look at the civil rights issue during that time period. Excuse me. And then in 78, looking at his film In the Mall with the Dawn of the Living Dead, we look at consumerism and how in the 70s there was this idea of unrest. 70s might have been a fun time, but also people were concerned about what was going on and the rampant consumerism. That's why it was In the Mall. So we look at different cultural and historical contexts, and the zombie just plays a small role in it in many cases.
Of course, you didn't take the zombie class, but the zombies have given you a job after college.
Yes, they have.
As a makeup artist. So there's something to be said for that. Do you also do other monsters?
I have before, but not as many, werewolves or vampires. Nothing compares to the amount of zombies I have done. This past weekend, I went through about 140 zombies at the Zombie 5K in Rock Hill. So.
It was a very slow race.
They're quick. They're quick.
I mean, if you want to run away from anything, it would be a zombie. So.
What about the – oh, never mind. your class, I'm told, is this – how many sessions have you offered in this class?
This is the first semester, but it will be continued on.
And I'm told that it filled up really quickly.
Oh,
Was that a surprise to you?
No.
How many students?
It's only 22 students, but we had a fairly large waiting list for it as well.
Have you talked – when you started this class, mm-hmm. did you talk to the students about why they were interested in
this? Oh, absolutely.
Why are they interested in this?
Some were honest and said just, you know, they thought it sounded like a
crib
course.
Cool,
yeah, no, yeah, it's a cool class. We thought we'd watch a lot of films.
This is the one the football players take.
No. Now, this class is wonderful. They are very engaged and – very intellectual. You wouldn't think so about zombies, but they are. It's also a writing intensive class. So there is a great deal of writing and essays that they have to submit and an oral communication component. So they, you know, they do different presentations as well.
And it's not unlike a sociology class in many ways.
In many ways, I would agree.
Because you're examining the psyche of society.
I think you could see it as a sociology, a psychology, religious studies class. As well as English and American studies.
What was the
course.
Reaction of whoever you have to report to or whomever you have to ask to start a new class? What was their reaction when you said, I want to do a class on zombies?
Well, Dr. Paula Eckert is actually who I spoke with, uh-huh. and she was extremely excited. I just brought it up, and she's like, oh, I just went to a conference where they were talking about this. And so she's been very supportive about it.
Wow. Let's see. Mark on the web. Picking up on the civil rights era theme in the original Night of the Living Dead, does anyone on your panel think the current fascination with zombies is a reflection of the current right-wing fear of all kinds of others, which they believe are taking over their country?
Sure. I mean, that's the great thing, again, about post-apocalyptic stories and zombie stories is that people can read into their own interpretations however they like. I think... you know, speaking back to why the zombie is scary, is that they are essentially soulless creatures. Mm-hmm. You know, and most of the drama in these zombie stories is someone seeing a loved one, their wife or a mother or a child or something, being bitten and turned into a zombie and losing their humanity. And I think that ultimately in the apocalypse is what we're fighting for is our humanity.
Chris tweets, I think zombies are so popular because they present a fear that is manageable. Killing a zombie seems easy. How do you kill a zombie? Let's find out, because this is something we need to know just in case.
Absolutely.
There's a book about it, Zombie Survival Guide, Max Brooks.
Yeah, and that book came out around 2002, mm-hmm. 2003, when the first issues of Walking Dead were being published. So again, kind of all in one time.
So how do you kill a zombie?
You go for the brain. You can shoot them in the brain, smash in the brain. You've got to destroy the brain in most cases. That's the typical way. Some would say you can set fire to them if you can, but you've got to destroy the brain.
You really want a nice blunt object, Mike. You know, a gun, you have a limited amount of bullets. It makes a lot of noise. Maybe it gets the attention of other zombies. Maybe a crowbar.
Do you understand why it's the brain? It's the brain for zombies. For vampires, you've got to put a wooden stake through their heart or a silver bullet or something like that.
That's werewolves.
That's werewolves.
It's werewolves.
Excuse me.
Come on, Mike.
Jennifer May, I know.
Why is that? What is it about silver bullets and werewolves, stakes to the heart with vampires, and brains with
I think
why?
I think at least for vampires are sexual creatures, mm-hmm. so stabbing the heart is something that gets down to the emotional core of them. As for zombies, they are purely instinctual creatures, and so the brain, of course.
There's a serious side to this zombie craze as well. It's called there's a drug. There's several drugs. Mm-hmm. One's called bath salts.
Yeah.
Bath salts goes by several names, but it's said to create zombie-like behavior in mm-hmm. those who ingest it. Do you examine this side of zombie culture in your class?
Yes, we actually, the first week of class, we discussed the possibility of real zombies. And we talked about the bath salts. We also talked about there's certain insects, especially in Africa, mm-hmm. that if they bite you, they can cause zombie-like symptoms. So, and that's certainly an element we had to address.
And there's a drug called, is it crocodile or crocodile?
Crocodile, yeah.
That causes those who abuse it to lose pieces of flesh and digits that fingers fall off.
Yes.
And they know that going into it, and they still take it?
Yes. It's a very, very rudimentary-based heroin. It's like they think it's heroin.
Do they take it because there's a high involved, or do they take it because they want to be zombies?
No. Well, there might be a couple that want to be zombies, okay. But it's heroin, and they take it because it's cheap and fun, according to them.
Nathan on Facebook says, the British medical journal The Lancet published 3 accounts of zombification in 1997. We live in an age where suspended animation is real, and the definition of dead is debatable. Do you think we are marketing an actual medical condition that we are growing more capable of inducing? Do you think that the idea of zombies will lose popularity due to aspects of zombies becoming a medical reality?
Actually, yes, it's a terrific question, and one we've discussed in class as well. There's some evidence that there are certain substances being manufactured even by regular government officials that are working on it to kind of this zombified drug, more like anesthesia, though, not necessarily to turn into zombies.
In the interest of public interest, I want to put out some zombie self-defense rules before we leave today because these are important.
Please do so.
If confronted with a zombie, don't panic.
Right.
Get away from the zombies. Most of the time you can move faster than they can. Gather food, water, an emergency radio, flashlights, and weapons, and retreat to a secure location. If possible, retreat to a shopping mall where you'll have easy access to food and supplies.
That worked out well.
Stay away from densely populated areas where infestation is likely to be heaviest. Don't get surrounded or backed into a corner. Barricade all entrances and stay put. Remember that anyone bitten or killed by a zombie will become a threat to you and your party. Then wait patiently for rescue and make long-term preparations for your survival. Thank you all for being here. Shannon Bowerly, instructor at UNC Charlotte. Zombification of America is one of her classes. Adam Frazier is a writer and film critic and administrator of geeksofdoom.com and the writer of Creative Loafing's Console Me column. And Katie Bearden, who made up our producer, Alexia Girardi today. You can see pictures of her on WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins.